On Friday, Hampshire College's Board of Trustees voted to not accept a full class for the fall 2019 semester. The decision followed nearly three tense weeks of confusion among the college's students, faculty, staff, and alumni after the move was proposed by President Miriam Nelson. Kim Saul is the vice chair of Hampshire's board. An alumnus himself, he was part of Hampshire's first class in 1970. WAMC spoke to Saul about Friday's vote, the events that led up to it, and the controversy left in its wake.
I've always been tangentially involved with Hampshire, and then at the time of the 40th, in 2010, I returned for the anniversary event, and I was really disappointed in the direction of Hampshire at that point in time, and I heard a lot of frustration on campus by multiple constituencies. Our class, because it's the first class, is a very engaged class, and I was asked by members of my class to sort of engage with the college and share our viewpoints, and by doing that, it opened up doors, and then I was the alumni elected rep. So I joined the board, as I said, about 7 years ago. Loved my engagement so much that I actually took my career and moved it from Cambridge, where I was a physician leader for 29 years, and moved out here and now live in Northampton and a part of the local community here.
And now you find yourself on the other end of that, where you're, you know, a part of the college, maybe hearing from alums and other groups who have some criticisms of where the college is at right now. What's that like?
I think it's a statement of Hampshire College. I really support the diverseness of opinions, the conversations that occur through that process. Because I'm not there. I do understand, and try to do a better and better job every day of understanding where they're coming from and what their positions are.
You used the word process a moment ago, and I want to draw on that. A lot of the feedback I've heard from active students at the college is the sense that a process of shared governance was betrayed by the administration in not incorporating the feedback and ideas of faculty, staff, and students into some of the larger decisions that were made just in the last week about taking on an incoming class and preparing for the college's financial future. Do you feel like that is an accurate portrayal of the administration's activities?
I think there is some truth to it. It's definitely not 100% false. I would also say that there have both been circumstances that challenged us. We clearly have heard a lot from the different constituencies, and we are clearly trying to communicate, and more important than communicate is also engage all of those different constituencies from this moment forward. So therefore, by us taking that action, we are in fact recognizing that it could have been done better in the past. We were, I'm sure you know, driven in part by a leak and the fact that the wrong story was going to get out there, and we really did not want that wrong story to get out there. And so we needed to tell the story quicker than we would have liked to have done, and so we didn't have the opportunity to engage as many as we would have liked to have engaged prior to that announcement.
With that context in mind, why did the vote about the incoming class come so quickly after this, you know, admittedly rushed process began in mid-January?
As you heard in our vote, we did accept both the deferred students and those that were accepted under early decision one, which was an acceptance that happened on December 15th. The reason for that were many, but I think the first one was our moral integrity to uphold the contract. we offered those students the opportunity to enroll at Hampshire College. And at that point in time when we offered that to them, we believed that we could fulfill our promise to them of the ability to graduate from Hampshire College with a Hampshire College degree. Since that time, with a lot more analysis and work, we cannot give that guarantee.
Can you unpack that? Oh, sorry. Can you unpack that a little bit? Like, what guarantee can you not uphold?
We cannot guarantee that we can offer them a Hampshire College degree in 4 years' time.
And why is that?
Finance.
Now, I know there was a talk of potential legal framework that would make making that promise potentially hazardous for the college. Could you unpack the thinking behind that a little bit?
I think there are a number of factors that went into that decision. I think the first and most important one was we ourselves didn't believe that we could give them that promise based on what we know about our finances at the present time. So although they look good right now, although we have a balanced budget right now, although we have $50-plus million in the endowment, as we look to the external environment, which is the headwinds that we are facing, that we recognize that that path that we're presently on was a path that would not take us to where we would be to need to be in 4 years. By accepting a class now, in addition to that group, we need to recognize we have a different set of data available to us, which we didn't have back in December, which was this knowledge about the 4-year projections for Hampshire College. And so it would be disingenuous to us at this point to accept the class. Legal, I mean, there is the, I would say to you, these are potential processes that may come into place over time. They are not there yet. They're being worked through the legislative body, but clearly they're not there now. So I don't think they in any way ultimately impacted the decision. I think the tone of what they're talking about is highly consistent with what we have talked about, but it's not, you know, people talk about the stress test and new laws that are going to be passed. They haven't been passed yet, and we know that the legislative process takes a lot of due diligence, and what we see today and what will ultimately come out of the legislature will be dramatically different from what we see today. So that did not drive our decision.
The common reaction that I've gotten from students and staff and faculty from the last month of news out of Hampshire has centered a lot around fear and uncertainty. I'm interested in, from your perspective and the board's perspective and the president's perspective, what can be done from your end of this to quiet some of those fears and respond to some of that concern?
There are both immediate and, I would say, short-term things that can be done. I'm not putting in long-term because I think when the stress and anxiety which exists on campus, which is present today, you don't solve that in the long term. You need to address it quickly. The first is engagement, is really getting a common understanding of the state of the college and how we can work together to assure the best future for the college. So that sort of work needs to be done on campus. And the second is to provide the hope. And that hope can be either presently in a theoretical sense of talking about a strategic partner, but I think the hope will come when there is the identification of that strategic partner. So the sooner that we can identify a strategic partner, I think that will be the first step, a major step, to installing that sense of future and hope for the college. And let me be clear about what I mean by identifying a strategic partner. In identification of a strategic partner, there is initially always a quiet phase where one sees at a very high level, is there consistency in visioning between the two partners and how each one sees value in the other. Once that happens, then it goes from a quiet phase to a public phase. And during that public phase is when you get the involvement of all the constituencies in the Hampshire community to build with that potential strategic partner what that looks like.
Are any candidates coming forward to be that strategic partner?
Absolutely, yes.
Are you at liberty to give a sense of what a shortlist might look like right now?
Absolutely no.
One of the calls from student groups have been to include the Faculty and Staff Crisis Committee in some of these deliberations moving forward. Is that a move that the board and the president is willing to take at this time?
So we have engaged a number of committees on campus. There are those who have historically been there for years and years, the Faculty Executive Committee, the Staff Committee, the Student Advocacy Network. More recently, there's been a strategic visioning task force, which includes students, faculty, staff, and trustees, a faculty innovation group, which is a group of faculty thinking about the future model, and most recently, the crisis committee. So the crisis committee consists of six faculty and six staff, selected by the faculty and staff. We invited them to a board meeting where they joined us for one session for us to sort of hear each other and talk to each other. As a result of that discussion, we invited them to sit with us during the financial presentation to the board, to the discussion we held about taking the vote, and to the discussion we had regarding the potential strategic partnership. So this was just one of multiple ways that we are listening to the multiple constituencies on campus and trying to increase that in engagement. So the simple answer to your question is absolutely yes, they will be included as part of that process.
On February 4th, 137 faculty members from Amherst College sent a letter to President Nelson about the current situation at Hampshire, asking the college to double down on efforts to not compromise credibility in the process, to emphasize transparency, and to generally proceed forward with a sense of, you know, Hampshire College's history as being the shared governance system. I'm interested in what senior administration at Hampshire have considered or responded to from that letter.
I haven't seen that letter yet, so I can't be one to answer that. I will just comment on one thing. I think one of the challenges as a physician, one of the things that commonly happens is that we use language that a group of physicians sitting around the table interpret that language as meaning one thing, and then you sit with a bunch of patients, and they interpret that language completely differently. The term of shared governance is one of those terms. And so I think what we have tried to do most recently at Hampshire is assure that all constituencies have a common understanding of what that term shared governance means, because there is a literal translation of it, which if you look it up on Google or some other, you know, Wikipedia, that is one definition of shared governance. And so I think some people, when they hear that term, think about it in that framework. but I think others think about it very, very differently. So it's important that we all come to a common understanding of what that term is, and it's very nuanced. It is different in different areas, and so I think that's part of the process we're going through now, is really understanding what is the work that's primarily driven by the faculty, what could be the work that's primarily driven, let's say, by the board, and what's the work that is driven by faculty and board. I'm just using faculty as a single example. We could replace that with the word student, staff, alums, friends, but trying to parse out how each of those different constituencies work with other constituencies on campus, be that administration or the board. I've always used, so in my work in healthcare has been sort of very similar to the work we're doing now at Hampshire College, and I've always described the work as needing a three-legged stool, one leg being administration, one leg being the board, and the third leg is sort of the community, and that community here would be students, staff, faculty, and alums. And without all three legs, that stool will not stand. And so, and the communication has to occur directly between any two of those legs. So it can't occur board through administration to the community. It has to be board to community conversation. It has to be community to administration conversation and conversation between administration and the board. And it's all three of those two together, which will give us the foundation which is needed to move forward. The students are championing, I'm not going to say this correctly, we are Hampshire, we are, you know, we cannot be divided. I 1,000% agree with that statement. For us to be successful, we all need to be united.
Given that a lot of the frustration that's been out there from some of those groups comes from the fact that some of these decisions were made, you know, before this unification process began, that's sort of the center of many of the complaints. Moving forward from here, what are the steps to work backwards from some of these decisions that were made without two of those legs, at least?
Well, I wouldn't say without two of those legs. I would say... I think the three legs were there. I think they that part of this was, I think, poor communication between the three legs. Part of this was lack of a certain degree of engagement between the three legs. But I think the three legs were there. We did have different committees. This is not a conversation that just started on January 14th. This has been going on for years and years and years. So I think it has been there. But to answer your question, my belief is I happen to have a love for cars, and so my analogy is the rearview mirror is small, the windshield is large. We absolutely need to learn from our past and work on what happened in the past. But we really need to focus on where we are today and how we move forward. And so it is, at this point in time, it is extending to as many groups as possible. It is each of those groups figuring out how they get the work done. So there are, for example, multiple different faculty groups. The faculty need to decide themselves how they best interact with administration and the board, because there are many, many different activities that need to occur, and everyone needs to understand who's going to take on the task of working on each of those different activities.
The board has talked about how this conversation's been ongoing for years, which I think kind of contrasts with the abruptness of both the announcement and then the subsequent vote. What accounts for that timeline sort of contracting like that, from years of conversation moving to weeks of information before a vote?
What accounts for it is the fact that the communication didn't occur well. And in communication, there's the person speaking and the person listening, and it requires both the person speaking clearer and the person listening being more attuned to the message being stated. And so I think there's responsibility on all of us for that.
Do you think that Hampshire's administration has gotten a fair shake over the course of this process? There's been a lot of conversation, a lot of criticism. Do you think it's unfounded, or do you think that these decisions are sort of being misrepresented?
I think the concerns about communication and engagement, there's a lot of truth and concern about those. And again, I think not. I want to make sure it's clear to say I believe there has been a lot of engagement. I think Hampshire is a campus that demands a lot of engagement. I think compared to most institutions, there probably has been a lot more engagement here over this time period before January 15th than might occur at other institutions. But I'm a person who we graduated from Hampshire College. We are constantly experimenting. We constantly are unaccepting of what we're doing now. So I constantly challenge myself. So I will say, always there's opportunities to improve in communication, improve in engagement. I will say that. On the other hand, I think part of this is we are shooting the messenger. That, in fact, we now have a leader who, in many, many ways, is far more transparent that we have had historically. And that's what's hard right now for Hampshire, is to hear that transparent message. This is not a problem that just began on January 14th or January 15th, 2019. This has been an ongoing problem for years, and I think we have someone now who has clearly stated what that challenge is. As I said before, always can be improved upon how one communicates it, but the message is the correct message. That Hampshire needs to continue on that road of experimentation, continue to strive to develop the Hampshire College for the next 50 years, and that's the road we need to travel.
Moving forward, what is on the timeline? Like, what's coming up next for the school as it navigates this process?
I think there's the internal part and the external part. The internal part is building trust and confidence in one another, and that requires multiple opportunities for engagement. And so we're doing that. On the external front, it is exploring those opportunities for a potential strategic partner, and then ultimately identifying that partner, and then once that partner is identified, work closely with that partner over the next, once that partner is identified, then there's sort of a few month period of sort of really understanding what that partnership could look like. And then a one-year period of transitioning with that partner to the new model. So sort of a process that starts now and hopefully will continue and ultimately end up in that relationship in sort of the summer of 2020.